podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Mirror man, mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good evening and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. We are here live after the game, our first loss for the season. It's going to be a feisty one out there today. Hints of corruption, some bad defending, some poor composure in front of goal, and ultimately a disappointing loss against a very average United team. I'm joined by the by Johnny Cochran, who looks a little bit slumped in his chair compared to where he was early in the week, but still wearing that carnival shirt. Johnny, how are you?
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is it's going to be hard to take a game like that. It feels like a bit like a sucker punch, obviously. But I definitely think there are some positives to take. Last season, we were pumping out losses where you could walk away and genuinely be like, I don't think there's even any positives out of that. It's just shit. I don't think that was just shit. There were some seriously shit parts, which we absolutely have to learn from. But, you know, in general, there were certainly some signs for optimism, I think. But we'll get into that.
I'm also joined by Matt Candela. Matt, how are you feeling right now? That was awful. An awful feeling to exit that game. So much hope heading into the game. We started well, we played well, but ultimately it wasn't to be. What's your top line feel right now?
Top line is, it's just been a long time since we've had any bad news at Arsenal. It's been all one-way traffic for a while, right all the way back to last season when that Newcastle game. So having got all those wins on the board and such a positive pre-season and such a good feel-good factor, it does feel, a defeat hurts. It really, really hurts and stings today. But that's probably a good thing, because there was a moment a couple of years ago where we were sort of apathetic and we were just rolling off the defeat. So we just got to dust ourselves down and move on. The game's the game. We've got 15 out of 18. So we're top of the league. So we'll dig in. But lots to chat about in that. It was event-filled, to say the least.
It was event-filled. It's quite nice to go to Old Trafford, feel like you can win. And, you know, I've been apathetic after United games quite a lot over the last decade. I don't feel apathetic today. I feel angry and upset because we are the better team. There are some errors in the system. Title hopes are probably over now. But also, you know, the focus this season is making something of the top three. And I still think that we can do that after watching the games this weekend. But there are things to work on. So why don't we just fire right into the AOP, the hottest of takes. Johnny, I think I'm going to go to you today for the hottest of takes. What are you thinking right now?
Well, we're going to go into some of this stuff in more detail in the sections that will come up. But it's hard not to come away from that and think, for anyone who's getting potentially carried away, Arsenal going to win the league and that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I might even include myself in that category there. No, yeah. I mean, I was never actually saying we were going to win the league. I like to get gassed. I like to go with it. I lean into the enthusiasm rather than, you know, sticking to logic too much, because that's what football's about. But look, we got to see in full vibrant colour where this squad is at, and it has bags of potential, bags of ability to go to a place like Old Trafford, which is, you know, look, they started poor and rumours of United's demise was greatly overestimated. They are by no means a great team, but they're no mugs. They're not going to just, you know, they're not going to finish in the bottom half or anything like that, which was being talked about by the naysayers in the early part of the season. They're going to be up there in and around it. And we went there, and as far as I could see, we dominated the game. We dominated large parts of the game. And I think there were a few key points, which we can again go into. But there is naivety at its core. Some of it is from the players, and some of it, unfortunately, today is from the manager. I thought there were decisions being made which were just bonkers. They felt bold at the time, but in hindsight, they seemed absolutely mad. And I am now because I've been so impressed by what I've seen with Arsenal, I am very much leaning into, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt when it comes to transfers, when it comes to the way that we're playing. So when I see three subs coming on with 70 minutes, I'm like, you know what? He's probably been working this in training. The squad knows what to do when they're in this position. They're going to defend in this way. And, you know, I was deceived. Clearly, it looked like players went from having a complete grasp of the game, and I thought we were in control, to looking absolutely like Benny Hill at the back. Just calamity, Keystone Cops. No one knew what was going on. Marcus Rashford looking like, you know, Ronaldo all of a sudden. And it's really just came down to a lack of organisation and lack of understanding. So on another day, we beat United easily. I think we're a better team overall. But if anyone thought that we could fast-track this squad through the periods of them learning how to be champions, there is no fast track. They're going to have to learn from mistakes like this. And, you know, we'll take it as a learning experience. The key, and this is ultimately what the hottest takes, is we cannot make this blip turn into a run of bad form. If we turn it into a run of bad form, then suddenly we're nowhere near as, you know, far along in terms of our progress as what we thought we were. If this is just one bad game when we made some mistakes, then ultimately it's not going to derail our season losing at Old Trafford by no means. So we got to make sure that this was a one-off and we come back in our next game absolutely hungry to prove a point.
Mac Andella, you said before the game you had shades of 05, the 05 season blotching your memory. There were some similarities there today. You were right. We trust your gut, as they say. What's your take coming out of this? Is this a sign of things to come, or is this a blip on the march to top four this season?
Well, there's a lot to unpack. My hottest of take is, I said it before, which is everybody is itching to say that Arsenal have played a load of bang average teams, and this is the test. This is the test because it's the first half-decent team we're playing. And by the way, we're not playing City or Liverpool or even Spurs away. We're playing United away, who are a top-six team, not really a top-four team. And it was just a really, really... It was really important for me that it was actually less about the performance today and more about the result. We needed to just not lose. And in the end, we got something different. I think we got half a performance. I think the performance was all right, which is why part of the reason why it hurts. But the hottest to take is we've been making these mistakes for a long time, these type of naive mistakes away from home. You know, it's sort of beyond a joke, and we've really got to start doing better. And we were hopelessly naive in the moments that really mattered today. Hopelessly naive. And it's hard to take, because that's not that the way we approach the game is not the way Arsenal are going to win games against top four, in my opinion. There are moments when you've got to be more patient, you've got to be more disciplined, you've got to preserve energy. So I'm disappointed, but the biggest disappointment is that we had it. We could have won that game and we didn't. So we're just going to have to... The proof is going to be how we respond to it. At least we've got an Everton at home next week. But it's frustrating because we've got this tough run of games now. And you don't want to fall at the hurdle at the first one. And we did. So my hottest of takes is... Oh, there's one final thing, which is... It just brings me back to that young Arsenal team, Project Youth. Just I feel like I've seen this game 15... 20 times before in big games when Cesc and all those guys were coming through, and it's just youth. And the problem with it is that you risk your best players leaving before they can realise and fulfil their potential. We can't do the same thing again. We can't take 3 years to learn from these mistakes. But hopefully we'll dust ourselves off, take the learnings. At least it's not a cup game where we're out. At least we've already won five games and we're still top of the league. So you know, all we can do is dust ourselves off and move on. And really, the post-mortem on this, we're not really in a position to do it now. We'll have to do it in 5 games' time and see what the response was in those other big games that we've got.
I think I don't see, you know, it is Project Youth because it is Project Youth. It's the youngest team in the Premier League. Like, we can't escape that. Like, no one is going to be able, like Johnny said, no one is going to be able to fast track experience, and we're going to have to go through rough patches. But, you know, let's sharpen our minds to just a few weeks ago. This team did beat Liverpool. So I don't think we can go too hard at Arsenal. No. And I also don't think that, and I also would wholeheartedly disagree that the 5 games we've played so far have just been, yeah, cool, you know, like definite wins. Man City just drew to Aston Villa yesterday. Probably should have lost considering the Coutinho goal that was let go. So I think Man United are going to be semi-decent this season. Toxic teams always turn up in the games that they think are big. But I disagree that, like, the style of play was brutal. You know, if that first goal had stood like it should have, I think it's an entirely different game. I think that there was inexperience from the manager. I think the shape that we had before that triple threat substitution came in was good. Like, we were knocking on the door. There was inexperience in the team. Like, we got done by 3 goals that were almost identical today, just right through the middle. That sort of goal is not a story that we've seen a lot under Arteta, getting ripped through the middle. That's an Unai Emery, Arsene Wenger type thing. So we need to nip that in the bud. But I still saw enough out of that performance. I thought it was a great performance. You know, you win that 2-1 and we're talking about winning titles, and then you lose it 3-1 because you overexert yourself in the final 25 minutes. And then it's like, oh, you know, we're going to win the next 2 games. I think the key is right there, Matt. Once we get to the international break, we'll know where we are with this side. If we go to Everton and we win, if we beat Brentford and we're still top of the league heading into the international break, no one's talking about inexperience. They're just talking about getting done over by an extremely lucky Man United side where everything went right. So I'm a little bit more optimistic. I'm just gutted because I feel that there were extenuating circumstances out there today beyond just experience, that you're never going to be able to, like, that the Premier League has got to help clubs get over, because that was a disgusting performance by VAR, a disgusting performance from Paul Tierney. And I hope Arteta comes out after the game and goes nuts about Tierney, because when that sort of terrible decision-making happens against Liverpool, if you extend back to last year, Liverpool-Tottenham, when Harry Kane nearly broke Robertson's leg and then Robertson got sent off, that referee didn't go near Liverpool until this season. That was like from that January extended the right way through. I don't want to see Paul Tierney anywhere near an Arsenal game for the next 6 months. He is disgraceful. My hot take, bad moment. How do we react? If we react with 2 wins and we're top of the league heading into the break, people have got to take us seriously this season.
Well, I mean, so we might as well just go into that, because we will come on to some of Arsenal's involvement in our collapse later on in the pod. But let's start with reffing hell. You called out Paul Tierney and his performance there, Pete. What was it in particular that gave you issues? Purely because if we're talking about probably the biggest turning point of the game for me, which was the disallowed goal, then Paul Tierney did actually give the goal. And it was down to VAR, which meant that it was later reversed. Obviously, at that point, whether you like it or not, Paul Tierney's in a bit of a tough situation. When VAR tells you to go and check it, you're kind of basically being strong-armed into turning your back on the decision. And I think that he actually really didn't want to change his mind, because he was there. He looked at it. He even said, play on, in the moment. So what was it when you say that Tierney, you know, had an absolutely disgraceful decision that, you know, is the draw of your ire?
There are two parts to this. Firstly, there's the cultural context of what's gone on in football this weekend. Referees have gone out of their way to chalk off amazing goals. Everybody was complaining about it. Just before the game went off, the Premier League is working with the Referees Association to investigate VAR messing up the West Ham game and messing up the Newcastle game yesterday. So, point one, all of those referees in that little collective knew that don't go near a VAR issue today unless you really, really, really have to. Then the second point is just look at the rules. The VAR is not supposed to re-ref the game. And unless it is clear and obvious, you don't make the decision. So when Tierney went over to that screen and he took, 45 seconds to make a decision, it is not clear and obvious. So it doesn't matter whether VAR is strong-arming you. You're at the top of the refereeing game. You're supposed to be one of the best, most authoritative figures in world football at refereeing. You should just say no. And let's moving away from that soft touch. I'm watching Harry Maguire manhandling Eddie Nketiah in the box. I'm watching Martinez double foot the ball in the penalty area. Nothing. I'm watching decision after decision after decision. McTominay literally rugby tackled Jesus to the floor. There's no consistency. And here's the thing that really, really gets me about Paul Tierney. He understands what's going on this weekend. He understands that referees are under pressure, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care because there is never a consequence to this, to bad decisions in refereeing. And once again, the conversation after the game is about referees, and it's just baffles me. It's like we should never be having conversations about referees, and it doesn't happen in America, doesn't happen in MLS, doesn't happen in La Liga, doesn't happen very often in Germany. But here we are talking about Paul Tierney again ruining the game. And the bigger thing is, he grew up in Salford. Do you think he was a Manchester City fan? Absolutely not. He grew up in Salford. His friends and family are from there. And that's 3 days after having a referee that was, from Liverpool, given his idol game. So I think the refereeing is disgraceful in this country. And I think Paul Tierney ruined the game again. It's disgusting.
So, obviously, yeah, Pete's made his points there. I mean, again, who you point the finger at is up for debate, in my opinion, because I do think whether you expect more from the referee in that situation or not, he's been put in a very difficult situation. Why does VAR need to get involved in that situation is the more pertinent one. Again, you're talking about clear and obvious. If it's not, you just stay out of it. And at the end of the day, when the referee has looked on the pitch and made it, you could not, from a VAR's perspective, you could not confuse the situation in that Paul Tierney hadn't seen it, because he made a point of saying, I am playing on, let's go with it. And so at that point, once you send him over to the screen, he's in a difficult situation and he's basically going to have to go up against VAR. Matt, what did you think about the refs, including the role of VAR today?
Well, I was screaming when that Martinelli goal went in, because it was just such a brilliant finish, and it just felt like we were really going to kick on from there. We'd sort of were beginning to get a foothold in the game. And then was obviously sort of gutted when they started calling a VAR, but wasn't that worried at the beginning. But I think it's as soon as the VAR technician asked the ref to come over, you're always in trouble. I think it's ridiculous, because I think that if two of you can't, if you need people to, if it's that hard a decision, even with slow motion and the use of technology, I think you've got to give the benefit to the goal scorer. That was always the thing for me. It was like the offside rule. It's like, give the benefit to the attacker. And I think we're losing that, where we're now giving the benefit to the defensive team. You look at all these decisions, it's they're making it harder to score goals, not easier. And I think from an entertainment factor in the Premier League, you want to be giving more goals when there's some debate rather than getting rid of them. I thought it was a really soft decision. Really soft. Don't agree with it. I think he was being pressed and he went down under the pressure, but it wasn't a mistimed tackle. And I think that's like a really important distinction. And so was absolutely gutted by it. I think, like you said, it's difficult for Paul Tierney once he's got roped in and is over there, because the decision is basically, I think there's a good chance. You're basically saying, I think there's a good chance this is a foul. but I'm going to put it on your shoulders to go and you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. So unfortunate, but like we said, as soon as he was called over, it was game over. And I just think that today of all days, after yesterday's performance with VAR, there was no need to go and do that. And I don't think there'd be a post-mortem after the game. And I think you're looking at Alan Shearer and all these people coming out after this decision and going, this is getting stupid. And I do feel like we've been on the raw end of a lot of them. It's not like we're getting a lot of penalties or decisions going our way through VAR, but we do seem to be getting goals chalked off when they really matter. But I think, Pete, the one final point is that VAR is supposed to be making things objective, but it's actually really subjective when you employ VAR. Like this was a decision, and I think there was a great comment about it being like 65 yards from the goal in a moment when, you know, the referee had already made a decision. It's like if this is up for VAR, then every interaction on the pitch needs to be up for VAR. So I thought it was outrageous, to be honest, and I thought we should have been 1-0 up.
Yeah, certainly. You know, that the thing is some people are like, I was watching it with my brother-in-law, Arsenal fan as well, and on watch back, he was saying, look, it is a foul, you know, let's be honest and stuff. And I don't know. I just think, as you said, Matt, I just think it was so soft. And ultimately, he didn't go down because of impact. Odegaard did kind of run into him a little bit. But, you know, where is the, you know, when did it stop being incumbent on the player on the ball to keep his feet, to try and stay up? Literally, Eriksen felt someone at him and just dropped to the floor. And they go, oh, that's a foul. You know, and what we talked about previously with the VAR situation was, you know, a bit of contact with someone is not a foul in of itself. It has to be enough force to actually contribute to the player going down. If you just make contact with someone, that's not a foul. And that needs to be got away from. You know, the only point where that changes is obviously if a player is moving at high speed, and at that point, you know, a little bit of contact can mean that they just fall over. But that was not the case with Eriksen. He's basically felt the slightest bit of pressure, knew that he was going to be robbed of the ball, and just collapsed on the floor. It was in a completely, you know, different scenario, but a similar principle to what we saw with Edouard Mendy yesterday with Jared Bowen. Now, at the end of the day, he felt the leg on him. And yes, Bowen's leg did touch Mendy. But what actually happened is Mendy realised he'd fucked up, felt a leg, and then rolling around. Oh, no, no, no. There's no way in the world that, you know, leg causes that much pain and agony to you. The reality is you knew you'd fucked up, and so you try and draw it. And, you know, in both instances, I think the decisions have been bought. I don't think it was a complete robbery, but I do think that it was extremely, extremely kind to them. And let's face it, if we had scored that goal and it had stood, I think this game goes completely different. And I think we could have given them something today because we were completely dominating at that point.
And if it was the other way round, and it was us making that tackle or that press or that foul in the middle of the park, and then them going on and putting them 1-0 up, there's no way in the world that the ref is going back and disallowing that. It only gets done to the away team. There's just no, I just don't believe that's even possible.
Same.
If you're going to give that as a foul, then you've got to give the Maguire one, where he puts his arms around him and pulls Eddie down in the box. If that was contact, that stopped him completing a move. I think that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink was pretty aggressively on the side of Arsenal. I think even Roy Keane was sheepish about that. And if an Arsenal player, do you remember when Danielson fell over because someone was up behind him and he didn't fall on the ball? And Wenger called him naive. I kind of feel like if an Arsenal player had fallen over like that and the goal had stood, the commentators in the box would have said, you've got to be stronger. You can't get knocked off the ball like that. But when it's Arsenal, it's something completely different. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. But again, the referees have conspired to ruin things, and there will be no consequence to them because there never is. Why doesn't a referee get fired? Why doesn't someone in VAR get fired? What makes VAR even worse is the worst referees that have to retire, they just get a plum job up in that office. It's like we're just like doubling down on bad decision making.
It's a wild time. But look, we are not going to come out here and pretend that all of this, you know, the bad result, the result not going our way, was all down to referees doing us, because I don't think it was. We have to talk about the, quite frankly, elephant in the room, and that is the naivety of our play at the end. I hope you enjoyed my pun again, by the way, like nativity play, naivety play. So, yeah, guys, I'm just working on a different level. So, at the end of the day, one of the things that I saw was, from the manager's point of view, he's bringing on 3 subs on 70 minutes. For me, I mean, Gary Neville was saying it, not that I listened to everything that Gary Neville was saying, completely biased in his commentary. But one thing I think he did get spot on was with those substitutions on 70 minutes, the game seemed to completely change. We went from being in an authoritative position in that game to just seemingly being absolutely lost. Not only that, but there were actual in-person, like, particular players making really naive bits of play. Defensively, all over the gaff. At the end there, I think, you know, Xhaka, I thought, actually done quite well stopping the ball from going out and then getting broke on. There were some really naive bits towards the end of the game. What do you guys think in terms of how ultimately we just didn't seem to be ready for the moment? Obviously, United scored and there were certain things that went against us, but certainly Arsenal played into the hands of United. What do you reckon, Matt?
Well, I think the first half we weren't too bad, because I think a few things that I was impressed by, and by the way, I'm calming down a little bit as we move every minute that passes since the end of the game. But I thought we came into the game with exactly the right mindset, because we were really calm. We weren't trying to like dominate from minute one. We sort of weathered a bit of a storm in the first like 10 minutes, which I thought was really promising. It wasn't like we have done in these sort of games where we sort of lost our heads. We got a footing in the game. So it was a very professional start. And then we found our chance and we took it. And then VAR robbed us of it. But everything was going well. And we were getting a foothold in the game. And you really thought that, you know, we were taking control. And then the first bit of naivety. At this point, it's not really naivety. It's just a mistake. And it wasn't sort of something in the system. It was just a one-off, which was Gabriel. And he raced out of defence and just it was his poor decision when he didn't really need to go and come into Eriksen. And maybe there's a bit of, maybe Lokonga should have closed him down or whatever. We had problems with Eriksen all day. But that was the first piece. But it wasn't too bad, because as soon as that goal went in, it wasn't like we lost our heads. We just kept on doing what we were doing. And we were really unlucky not to get something before the half. Then we came out, great attitude in the second half. So it was just that we sort of lost our heads as soon as the second goal went in. And it was just naive defensively. I feel like you need to understand that you don't need to be back level. You know, we've got the whole game to play. And I thought both the way that we played was such a high line. I thought Lokonga was really good in the second half when he first started, but he was much more risky, much more on the front foot. And it's like, does he really need to be doing that? I mean, he was way more dynamic, way more offensive. But I was like, Arteta's obviously told them to like really get into United and that they're there for the taking. But it felt like we didn't need to go all in so early. You know, I don't think it's a bad result to be 2-1 down with 85 minutes gone, 88 minutes gone, because you'll get a chance. You will get a chance. And they'll get nervy. But as it was, there was no chance for them to get nervy. So...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, just naivety in key moments, and then with the substitution, yeah, just why did he bring them on so early? Could have just brought them on one at a time. Didn't need to go wholesale like that. But just very, very poor defending. And it was bizarre because when you look back on it, normally you get caught when it's like one versus one. We had three defenders back against one player and we were still getting sliced open. So yeah, just hopefully we'll learn from it and it doesn't become a bug in the system.
Pete, Matt has, yeah, he's kind of said that there was obviously some mistakes that were made there, but you know, it hopefully will just become a kind of one-off, a little blip, a road bump along the on the route, if you will. What did you make of it in terms of the, you know, the clear examples of naivety in our approach and potentially particular players?
I think Arteta should have been happy to exit with a point. And I think the players should have been happy to exit with a point. It's like when you get that goal back, there should have been a bit more calmness in the system. And I think, we had enough talent on the pitch. We were playing well enough to do exactly what Matt was saying. Just bide your time. Don't do anything stupid and find a gap somewhere. You know, like Fabio Vieira is a lock picker. Jesus was all over the park. Saka looked like he was hungry. Martinelli had already scored a goal a little bit earlier. And I think maybe this, you know, in March, playing the same game, I don't think we go as gung-ho. And part of me kind of loved that Arteta threw on all these attacking players to win the game because it took me back to the days of Arsene Wenger putting five up front to beat Chelsea and doing it. But hindsight is 2020 and it wasn't the right decision. And a loss is more damaging than a point. And now Arteta's got a bigger job to do to get everybody up for the Everton and Brentford games because they're going to be difficult. Everton were tough. You know, they were really good against Liverpool yesterday and Brentford just scored five against Bournemouth, I believe. So I think there was a lot of naivety from Mikel Arteta, but I don't want to go too hard at him because he's also been, spent the first half of his career at Arsenal being accused of loving negative football. And now he's going gung-ho in games, which is the Arsenal way. And it backfired today, but I don't think it will backfire all season. I also think that we'll get sharper in front of goal. We created a lot of brilliant chances and didn't quite hit the target. Like there are going to be games when things sharpen up and we're two or three up in 30 minutes. I think Man United rode the storm a little bit. I saw you put up a comment about Roy Keane saying, everyone can talk about Arsenal's performances, but it's results that matter. Don't always entirely agree with stuff like that. I actually think that the one thing I can take away from that Old Trafford performance is it was a good performance. If we'd gone up there and froze like we did against Newcastle, we'd have bigger concerns. But hopefully the team will take the positives out of that and channel that sort of victimhood energy in the next two games. And as I said earlier, win the next two games and no one's talking about United, lose the next two and everyone's going to go into the international break in a bit of a panic. So, plenty to learn. And I'm sure that those players will learn because there's a lot of quality in that squad, even if it is young.
Yeah, from my perspective, I kind of, alluded to it earlier, but I didn't mind when I'm seeing three players coming on. I certainly thought Eddie needed to get onto the pitch anyway, and I was pleased to see him in there. But the problem is, when you're going to start taking off your left back and start, presumably playing with a different system, because that's what I was thinking, how are we going to actually line up at the back line? I surely had to believe that Arteta had this team drilled, like in, it's almost like, NFL teams have different drills for different situations, like 2 minutes to go, this is what we do. And surely we went to Old Trafford knowing that with 20 minutes to go, if we needed a goal, this is what we would be doing. That's what I thought that was going to happen. But it didn't look like that. When it came on, it looked completely confused. And suddenly we weren't being able to win the ball back quicker. And I think it was naivety from Arteta's approach. As you said, Pete, I thought very well. We should have been happy with being able to just get a draw. A draw would have been a good result. At the end of the day, we were dominating the game. We just scored. If you slow down and don't concede, we're winning the ball back. We're getting opportunities to score more goals. But if we don't score, we take a 1-1 and we'll see you next time. But to go for it like that, we lost any semblance of control and just completely handed the initiative to him. So I thought, this is a team that reflects the manager. And largely, throughout the season, it's been nothing but good vibes to say. And I think that Arteta deserves all of the plaudits for the first five games. Without a doubt, he'll be manager of the month because we won all our games. And the fact is that he has shown that he can finally get his attacking ideas across to the team and everyone looks like they know what's going on. But Arteta has to learn from this situation. You can't just go completely gung-ho. I love the aggression. I do. I applaud it. But you can't have aggression without a plan. The reason why we're so effective at the moment is because we're aggressive with a plan. Everyone knows what they're meant to be doing. And because of that organisation, that's why we swarm. That's why we get the ball back so quickly. And that's why we're looking dangerous. And so I thought that he kind of threw the baby out with a bathwater just to try and, you know, he got too greedy. He was the dog.
He got greedy. I think greed is exactly it, Johnny. I think that's a good way of summing it up.
A dog with a bone looking into the pond. And guess what? We've now fucked off with a 3-1 and there's a bone in the pond, Arteta. And it's a 1-1 bone and we want that bone. But, hopefully you've learned your lesson and next time we all go home and we get what we wanted. But I do think that there were certain players that, you know, some of the players as well did not play well. We are going to come on to him and a player who did play well and that's Lokonga as far as I can see. But there were others who didn't look quite at it. And what one of the things that did worry me is some of the players that were brought on, not only do I think it was a mistake to have made that many changes without the plan, but some of the guys who were coming off the bench simply weren't having a proper effect. And for some of our belief and enthusiasm that our squad would be able to, you know, cover certain injuries, the next guy up would step in. Well, I tell you what, I'm not feeling as confident about that. Because some of the players coming off the bench just weren't looking at the required level. Certainly not the intensity. We all know that players need time playing in the team to develop that chemistry and, you know, confidence. But right now, there's a couple of them who just don't look quite at the level. But I did think we should move on to players that are playing well. And I just hinted at it. Sambi Reddy. Okay, Sambi, I thought, had a very, very good game in an area where we were all absolutely panicked. Because Partey's down there on any app for the season. This man went in a game which is, let's face it, it's a very tough place to play, Old Trafford. And when you've got thugs like Scott McTominay, who's, you know, better served outside of Weatherspoons on kicking out time rather than playing in a Premier League game, I thought Sambi handled the pressure and the game well. What did you guys make of Sambi's performance, Matt?
I thought he was all right. I thought first half he was a little weak. I mean, he was anonymous in the first half, I thought. And our game, the games that we play well, the person in that pivot role has more touches than anyone else. Thomas Partey, when we play well, he touches the ball more than anyone else. He's the conductor. So, and I thought Sambi touched the ball very little in the first half. And he didn't make any mistakes, but he certainly didn't impose himself on it. But it was relatively comfortable. It's exactly what I'd expect of a player who is getting his second start of the season, is young, is raw. He was doing his best. I think it was a decent effort. Second half, I found him way more eye-catching. You know, I thought he was told to get on the front foot and feed into the build-up. But the problem with that is I was like, why are we doing that? We're away from home against a good team. Just sit. Some teams like Chelsea put two people sitting in front in a game like Old Trafford. And yet we had one, and the guy we had, we were telling him to bomb forward and contribute in the build-up play. And that was another part of the sort of the naivety, really. I'm like, I think all of those goals we conceded, if he's just sitting in front of the back four, you stop two of them. And so... I thought it wasn't really on him. I thought he was decent. And I think he's done enough to get along. It's his now. And I think we got better and better as the game went on. You saw him become more confident, but I don't think he had a great game. I think he he did enough to keep his place. Game.
Pete, what did you make of Sambi's performance in an area that we were all kind of worried about in terms of how we were going to get it covered? Sambi played today. What did you make of his performance?
I thought he did well. I don't think we're here after the game talking about a midfield problem like maybe we have been in the past. I think I'm with Matt. I think he's trying to feel his way into form. I think sometimes when you're a young player, the job that you're trying to do is not to make a mistake and be the story after the game. I don't think he was. He was a little bit quiet in the first half. He made some really interesting passes in the second. His pass completion rate was like 90.5%, which is, you know, pretty high in a game of that quality. I want to see him get a bit more personality on the pitch. You know, Vincent Kompany talked about him as this great leader, never shies away. I think he does shy away a little bit, but he's had some, you know, some moments to cause PTSD. You know, like he came into the midfield when Partey got injured last time, and he was part of the midfield that lost three on the bounce. So I think he's probably had a bit of a crisis of confidence along the way. He knows Arsenal were in for Douglas Luiz, which, you know, it's nice that we didn't sign a six to replace him, but we tried, and Douglas Luiz isn't exactly a baller, as they would say. So I think the good news is that, as I understand it, Thomas Partey will be on the bench on Wednesday against Everton. So he'll be returning to the fold sooner rather than later. And I think just Thomas Partey has such good positional sense. His one-touch passing is unmatched, and he's just at the absolute peak of his game. I don't think Arsenal could have bought anybody in the transfer window that would come in and do what, you know, Partey does. There's a reason that he earns 250 grand a week and costs 50 million. So I think that Lokonga is an option. The thing that is going to be interesting is he going to be seen as an option as a six, or is he a stopgap as a six because he could move up into a number eight? Because I think some of his creative passing is really interesting. You know, he doesn't take the easy option, and he certainly didn't in the second half. You know, there were a few really nice balls that he played through. So he's getting better with every game. He's not a nightmare when he comes on, and I thought he was better than a lot of the midfielders Man United had on the pitch. So, a solid 7 out of 10 for me today.
Yeah, I mean, I somewhat agree with what you guys are saying. Obviously, he was less eye-catching in the first half, but didn't make any mistakes. And I certainly don't feel like our midfield was overrun. And in which case, when we're heading in and you're not our first, well, you're actually our third choice centre midfielder. If we're not being overrun in midfield, then you're doing a pretty good job. In the second half, I thought he looked excellent. In terms of the range of passing, some bits there, Thomas Partey don't always do stuff like that. There's a range of passing in there which is certainly would add a new dimension to our game. And I thought that he started to put himself about. He was winning challenges, which I like to see. He, you know, just little things, going up for headers with like some of their bigger boys and winning them, physically competing. And I do agree with what you were saying, Pete, about he needs to take the impetus. You know, to go out there and start dominating games rather than letting the game come to him. He needs to go out and seize the day, if you like. And I think that he started to grow into that role a little bit more. If you are going to be playing in that position, we do need you to be a little bit more of an enforcer. It's not going to be enough for you to just ping a couple of Moonrakers and then call it a day. We need you to be dominating in midfield as best as you can.
Eddie's a little bit like that. And that was one of the criticisms against Eddie whenever he would come on. You just wouldn't really notice that he was on the pitch. And then all of a sudden he realised that if he wanted to stay at Arsenal, he did have to impose himself. So I think that that's a shrewd observation there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that he is improving. One of my biggest takeaways out of the All or Nothing documentary was actually the conversation where Eddie and Lokonga were having a conversation at the table, and Lokonga was moaning that he wasn't playing. And Eddie was like, "What are you talking about, bruv? None of us are playing. What are you talking about?" And he started to get a bit shirty with him always. Like, don't come with that bullshit. I never get played and I want to play, you know. And it basically gave Sambi a little bit of a reminder that you're at a top club, mate. If you think you're just going to come in here and walk in and learn on the job, no. Eddie's been trying to break into this team for ages. And guess what? He's put in more quality performances than Zambi has over the last year. And when you see the way that Eddie applies himself when he comes into the team, he is absolutely hungry. You can see it. Everything about his performance literally exudes hunger to break into the team. And Zambi, as you were saying, Pete, I think he's starting to pick up on that energy. And, you know, it was summed up in that little snippet we saw on All or Nothing, because Eddie is showing, if you want to break in, this is how you got to do it. So, you know, long may it continue if he does keep coming with that kind of energy. But I also thought this is an interesting one. Now, let me just put a question mark on it, because I don't know which way you're going to go on this, guys. Saka back. No questions at all that Bukayo has struggled this season, in a season where we've been playing very well and others have really shone, not least his counterpart on the other wing, Martinelli, who seems to be scoring every week. But Saka certainly hasn't got to his usual standards up to now. But I thought he had a good game, obviously scored today, and just generally had a lot more influence over the game. What did you make of Bukayo? And is it too soon to say that he may well be moving back to his best? Matt, what do you reckon?
I thought it was all right. I think, again, he's feeling his way into the team. You know, it was less involved in our build-up and more, you know, he was used as a singular weapon out on the right flank almost. And then we'd see what he could do. You know, I sort of always felt like he was on the outside, not quite right at the heart of the game. Always a little bit on the periphery today. But he got a goal. He was decent. He's always dangerous. That's the thing about him. He's so efficient when he's got the ball. But I wouldn't say he was one of our better players. I think you look at like Martinelli and what he delivered in that sort of first half and beginning of the second, in terms of like involvement in the whole game. I think, frankly, Saka needs to get up to Martinelli levels right now of involvement in the whole game. And I think he's feeling his way back in. He'll be great. And I think the goal will help him. You know, he's off the mark, got an assist in the last game. It's all coming back. He's a bit of a slow starter anyway. So lots of positives, but it wasn't really his game.
I'm on mute. Pete, what did you make of Saka's performance today?
I enjoyed watching him today a lot more. I thought we were a lot more involved down the right. I thought Martinelli was great when he scored the goal, and then I thought he kind of like went a little bit cool for a bit, and it was the Saka show for large chunks. It just feel like something's got a click between him and Jesus at the moment. Like there are lots of ambitious passes, lots of that was nearly incredible. But look, he showed up for the goal with a cool finish. I don't think he looked tired out there today. I think his problem at the moment is he's trying to force it a little bit. I think sometimes he's, you know, he's snatching at shots a little bit. You know, he's got high standards. He knows that he's one of the best players in the Premier League at the moment. And I think he's just having a moment. And again, it comes down to experience. You know, he's 20, 21 years old. We look at him like he's 25, 26 years old because he delivers that level of output. But I think he's going to have a game where it all clicks. He's going to get a couple of assists and a hat trick, and then he's going to be rolling for the rest of the season. But I think that he was one of the better players out there today. A lot more work to do. But, you know, I didn't feel like he was anonymous in the way that I have felt. And didn't feel like it was dominated by the left today. Felt like he got a little bit more game time. And, you know, that's a big game to score a goal in. And hopefully it's the start of his climb to at least 15 goals this season.
I think it's a great point about him and Jesus, because I think we've seen so much positive stuff from Jesus, but he seems to prefer coming in from the left a little bit, operating in that left-hand side. And I think that's why him and Martinelli are having such a great partnership. But Saka doesn't really seem to have come more inside. He's almost spent more time hugging the touchline on the right. And so there's this big sort of space ahead of him. You know, he's almost got like, Jesus is always on the far post for him rather than on the near post for him. And so what I'd really like to see Saka do is come off that flank a little bit more. and spend more time, you know, closer to goal. And I think that could get more emperor. But I'm sure this is what he's doing, exactly what Arteta's told him. It's not like he's being told what to do. But the role of having a proper centre forward feels like it's more beneficial to the person on the left side than the right side right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do think that those might be mitigating reasons for why Saka has somewhat started slower than what we would be used to in terms of his levels. I do think that it started to become a bit of a... If Saka go... Well, you know, I think Saka may end up going on a bit of a run now. Similarly, there's a few players. I said in Before the Whistle this week, if you're not on that, by the way, do get on our Patreon, guys. You get a Before the Whistle every week. And I said that, you know, for all the people like, oh, Saka's kind of fallen off. Look at Son. He's got one assist. This is a guy who was Golden Boot winner last year. One assist, done nothing in five or six games. His Son, even though people don't like him, it's Tottenham, obviously, but he's not a shit player overnight, is he? Some of the greatest players in the league take a little bit of time to get going. Salah's not at his best yet. And I think that that game may actually be the catalyst for Saka to really kick on now. I thought, literally within the game, he seemed to turn his form around. At the start, he seemed to be a little bit... There's been little bits of indecision creeping into Saka's game, which is one of the reasons why I think he started slower. He's waiting longer than what he usually does. He's very impulsive usually, but impulsive in a good way. He gets the ball, he's immediately driving. He just knows what to do, and that's why he is so, you know, tyrannical when it comes to taking on fullbacks, because they're literally, as soon as he gets it, he's so decisive and he's running them and they're being put on the spot and most of them cannot live with him. And I thought he gave his, I can't remember the player's name now, the Man United fullback. Malacia, yeah. I thought he gave him, you know, kittens at times. In the first half, he, you know, we didn't really get too many looks at the penalty claim on Saka. But again, that was one of the biggest VAR things for me. But ultimately, in the second half, I thought he really started to come alive. Every time he got the ball, he was decisive, driving at his fullback and committing him. And there were, and at the end of the day, no fullback wants to deal with that. And I think that Saka's starting to do things more naturally now rather than overthinking it. And if he continues along this vein, we might start getting our Saka back. And if we do, the league better watch out, because I tell you what, he is going to be ready to roll. And with Martinelli doing bits on the other side, we're just going to be a really hard team to manage. And obviously, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Jesus's impact at the top. The guy was outstanding today. So whether or not him and Saka have been completely on the same page or not, everyone needs to get on the same page as Jesus, because he looks like a different class when he's playing in games like that. In terms of players who didn't quite look up to it, now, there may be mitigating factors for that, of course. Odegaard struggles. Martin Odegaard, obviously a big injury doubt for the game, did play. But for me, I was the one who wrote this headline. I thought he didn't look quite at it today. Certainly didn't look like he's, on the kind of levels that he's set for himself so far in this season. What did you guys make of Martin Odegaard's performance?
I thought he was all right.
Created four chances in a game. I mean, he skewed that shot wide. I think people hold him to this weird standard. It's like, listen, he created four good chances, playing with a little bit of a knock. I don't think that was an excuse, but it's a tough game out there today. Man United were extremely physical. We couldn't buy a chance last season. I think the people are a little bit unfair to him. He's just one of those players that some people have a bit of an irrational disgust for, and I find it super odd. But four chances is massive. He created the most chances on the pitch. How much more do people want out of him? Apart from he needed to finish. And this is a guy that's already racking up goals, and he should have done better with that opportunity. But I don't think it was a bad game by any stretch.
Matt? No, I thought it was decent, and I think, you know, as the dust settles, and I've had a look back at some of the highlights. Offensively, great. You know, there's two things let us down: some poor defending and some in-game management. You know, it's that was it. You look back. I'm looking at those goals again that we've conceded, and I can't believe it. I cannot believe how we've conceded these goals. We actually, the shape of the team in both situations was absolutely spot on. It's literally just, it's just concentration. It's concentration. It wasn't even like we were pulled out of position. It was just very, very small pieces and defensive errors. I will say that since the start of the season, I think we've been a bit sloppy defensively. You know, we joke and we go, oh, well, we always concede from the first chance that we concede. But I said it after the Villa game, we've got to get better and get tighter, because you can't give these goals away. And we saw it today. But yeah, Ødegaard fine. Offensively fine. Just all the poor moments were from the defensive side of play, I think.
So I'll give my reasons for why I think he did struggle. I don't think he comes in for unfair criticism, actually. Not really, because I actually think that he gets, you know, absolute adulation when he's purring, and rightly so. He's an absolute Rolls Royce when he's at it. So good on the ball, incredible vision. But sometimes, and I do believe that sometimes he needs to, you know, be fit, which is not too much to ask for a player to judge me when I'm fit. And I get that. So I'm not trying to, you know, suggest that he's somehow rolling out of form. He obviously was a late fitness test this week anyway, and there were doubts of whether he'd play. But I thought he was, he dallied on the ball a little bit, was a little bit overambitious with some of his passing, which was just not quite, it just wasn't quite there today. And I mean, the chances, look, I know, obviously, he scored in recent weeks and some big goals for us, but in big games, when you get chances like this, you've got to be able to finish your dinner. You've got to. And sometimes he is responsible for glaring misses. And we do need, if you're going to play in that position, if you're getting, you know, a free hit from 12 yards out, you've got to be able to finish that. You've got to. And so often it gets skewed wide. And I don't think he had anywhere near the impact that he has been in recent weeks, when, granted, he's been setting such a high standard. And the reason why I thought, here's the other side of it. When he came off, I thought that it was one of the reasons which contributed to us losing control of the game, because he is always available for passes. He has a calming presence within the team. It's one of the reasons why he's obviously captain. So he does, in general, exude, you know, leadership. And I appreciate that. But in terms of some of the passes that he plays, I think particularly in the first half, missed a couple of them are misplaced, going out of play. And yeah, I just don't think that he was quite at the levels that we would expect from him. And in a game where we dominated, as far as I'm concerned, so much in the first half, I think that if his passing was up to the usual standard that it was over the last few games, we may well have got the goals that we needed to get us out of sight in that first half. But that's just, look, some people were saying that they think Ødegaard was great. You guys obviously thought he was decent. That was just for me. I didn't think he had the best game. But we move on. It's not the be-all and end-all. So I think we're now on to, because we've been going for a little while, we're going to go into an AOP, AOB. Guys, we're at the end of the pod. In terms of a little thing now, well, I just want to kind of wrap it up in a little bow in terms of where you guys think this result leaves our season. People, perhaps the more deluded members of the Arsenal fan base and the more excitable ones, were egging up potential title pushes. That seems to be well out the window. But where do you ultimately see Arsenal's chances? Basically, give me a position in the league in terms of how you feel about us right now.
So, I think one of the things I found disappointing was I really hoped that Man United weren't going to be in the mix this year, because it's way easier to have to finish above Spurs and Chelsea, basically, than to finish above Spurs, Chelsea and Man United. It's an extra team to worry about. But from what I've seen today, I think Man United will be in the mix for fourth. I don't think they're a great team, but I think they've just spent a lot of money and have decent individuals and will be able to get over the line against most or a lot of Premier League teams. But it doesn't really change anything. We're top of the league. We're moving in the right direction. We have to see a positive response. We're going to lose. I still think we're going to lose more of the big games than we're going to win. which is just going to be frustrating, but it's just part of where we are in the process. And I think we're going to have to finish above Chelsea if we want to get top four. I think that's as simple as that. Can we do it? Absolutely. Is it going to be close? Absolutely. Every point matters. We've got to get the three against Everton next week.
Pete, Matt's buoyant and very confident that we are going to be able to get over the line in the top four race anyway. Do you think that that's the limits of our ambition, scraping into fourth? Or do you think that a higher finish is still on the cards?
A higher finish is still on the cards, absolutely. I think that third is in play this season. I don't think Chelsea are particularly good. You know, they didn't deserve to win against West Ham yesterday. I don't feel there's a lot of directness in the way that they play. They'll be up there. I think Man United, it's a bit of a dead cat bounce at the moment. Got pretty lucky against a really bad Liverpool side. Don't think they were particularly good in any of the three games that they've won. And I think that Arsenal were unlucky today. And I think that it's all about the performances. And I think we play a better brand of football. And I think United are going to get come unstuck later on in the season. I just don't think their recruitment has been that good. And my any other business is this. I think we've got 10 games left of the Premier League before we break for the World Cup. I do not want to see any of our big name players on that plane go into Holland, go into Zurich. I don't want to see it. Like, they should not. Like, we need to rest all of our best players. Martinelli, Saka and Thomas Partey, and probably Bill Saliba. They need to be wrapped in cotton wool and Ødegaard. Like, just use the cup games to blood youth players and put minutes in the legs of players that need them. If we keep our team fit until the World Cup, we'll be right up there and ready to strike when we get back. If we get big injuries, then I will start to review whether I think we can gun hard at top four.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm feeling what you guys are dishing out there. And I would very much say that I think third is still on. There's nothing I've seen today that has surprised me. The reality is the reason why we were never going to win the league is because of moments that we saw today. There was a naivety that would be creeping in. And again, I echo the comments that I said at the start. You can't learn these lessons overnight. You can't. Some of these players are fresh in the team. Saliba, fresh in the team. Jesus, who was outstanding, fresh in the team. And not so much him, but there are players that, you know, he has to get used to playing with him. I think that overall, we actually asserted ourselves really well in a game at Old Trafford, which is the first time in a long time that I can remember that happening. Most of the time, it's a little bit more of a meek surrender and we look a bit toothless. And I really don't like seeing that. That didn't happen today. There was issues, which we've discussed in detail, as to why we've come away from that game having been beaten. But I think there are a lot of positives. And I still think that if we don't make the same mistakes we made today against other teams further down the line, we're going to have every opportunity to be fighting for third. I think we will be right in the hunt for that. I think Tottenham have issues. They've been skanking their way through results. Liverpool look fragile as well. But I do think that we are going to be right in there. City, I do think we'll have more than enough to get over the line in this league, unless Erling Haaland gets injured. Maybe before the turn of the year, and then suddenly a run without him in the team might spring up some interesting results. But we don't need to be getting carried away. At this stage, we are firmly in the hunt for our targets. And I think that we are still looking like a terrifying outfit, and we are going to give some teams a horrible beating. And I can't wait to see that. I really can't. So for me, I'm going for third. I still think we'll get third. But all that today has dispelled is any wild notion that we were going to get over the line in the league. I do think that it will come a little bit too soon for us, but there's no reason why we can't get third at least. Pete.
Agree.
We're here. We're at the end of the pod.
We are. Are you going to tell people that they should go onto our Patreon?
I would, but you've just intimated it there. But you should, people, if you haven't already signed up to our Patreon, we have weekly Before the Whistle podcast. They are great. Everyone who has listened to these, you know, you've enjoyed it. tell your friends, get them involved in the Patreon community as well. You can go over, I think it's patreon.com/the Arsenal Opinion. Come over, say hello, sign up for a extra value, £3.50 a month. You can be part of our patronage. I don't even know which one. I think it's patronage. And yeah, become part of the family. We would most appreciate it. Help you support it. Have you supporting the pod. It really means a lot to us and keeps us having the energy and motivation to keep producing these podcasts for you. Have you got any other bits of admin, Pete?
Yeah, if you are on iTunes or you're on Spotify, get in there and give us a lovely 5-star review. Leave a nice message. We do read them. We will be back. I don't know what we're doing this week. It's probably not a before the whistle, before Europa League games, but we will have an episode for you on Friday morning that will do a little bit of a review of our European travels and a bit of a preview to our next game in the Premier League. So make sure you sign up to the Patreon. Make sure you share this podcast with all your friends and make sure you're back next week live, because we're going to be doing this all season for every single Premier League game.
Absolutely. Right. So nothing more to do than play the, look at this seamless little outro as we say ciao for now.
Mirror name, mirror name.
Wrong one. Ciao for now, everybody.
Sports Social Podcast Network.